Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. So we've been living and working with the current pandemic for about a year now, but that doesn't mean we should abandon our career goals or stay in a job that we really don't enjoy. And if you lost your job or are frustrated because you can't find the right fit, maybe today we can inspire you to rev up your search. My guest expert is Chris Holmes, an executive recruiter and partner at O'Connell Group, a leading executive search firm in consumer marketing and market research. Chris has more than 25 years' experience and is a member of the Pinnacle Society, the premier consortium of industry-leading recruiters in North America. She joins us today with tips from her new book, Ignite Your Career: Strategies and Tactics to Unleash Your Potential. Here's my guest, Chris Holmes. Chris Holmes, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Vicki, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Congratulations on your new book, Ignite Your Career. It's full of strategies and tactics to help unleash our full potential, which, of course, we need right now. You'd been thinking about this for a long time, I read, but it was a long time coming.
That it was. Vicki, I was thinking about this for about 15 years, and it wasn't until my baby went to college and I kind of was at a loss myself that I went to a personal coach who kind of told me, when I talked about writing the book, I lit up like a Christmas tree, and he kind of gave me the kick in the pants to get writing, so it was awesome.
Well, a lot of authors refer to their books as their babies, so you've replaced one baby with another there.
When my first two kids left, my husband replaced them with dogs.
Oh.
And when my last one left, it was a book.
There you go. So I want to begin with a story about you, because a decade or so into your own career, you made a career switch, and you did so for one of the same reasons that I made a career switch, because the next step was going to be much more political, mostly politics in my case, rather than doing the things that you enjoyed. So would you tell us about that experience and why you made the switch into what you're doing now?
Absolutely. Vicki, as you said, I was in marketing in something called brand management for a decade, and I was lucky to work at wonderful companies like Johnson & Johnson and Kraft and division of Nestle Purina and Herman Miller and fabulous places. And I loved parts of my job and was great at parts of mine, and other parts I got through. I managed them, but they were really hard for me. And as I looked at the job that was one up from me, instead of being exciting and really wanting that job, it scared me to death. Hmm. It made me very uncomfortable. And what happened was my company was sold, and so I was trying to figure out what was next. I interviewed and had a couple opportunities to continue on my marketing career, but I also happened to call my favorite recruiter and say, get me a job in St. Louis. We love it here. We want to raise our kids. And he threw out, come work for me. And that really threw me for a loop and made me take a step back and really assess, what do I love to do? What are my favorite parts of my job? And that made me realize that my favorite parts of my job all had to do with dealing with people, every single part. And as I really thought about it, there was no job more focused on dealing with people than recruiting. And talking to mentors, they all said, I think you'd be really good at it, and within a year you'll know, do you like it and are you good at it? And if not, you can always come back. So that's how I made the transition to recruiting. And seriously, within 2 days, I knew it was the right move, because it was a job that was really fun and easy. And I almost felt really bad for getting paid well, because it didn't feel like work.
Right. Well, that's an awesome experience, and not too many people are lucky enough to find that. So hopefully some of the tips in your book will help them find their way here. So what was it that made you want to write the book? You know, I know many of us kind of fall into a career because of family expectations or because of the education we've had or because it seems like a good idea at the time. We don't tend to give too much thought about it. But one of the reasons you wanted to write the book was to give us these tools, obviously. So, but why did you want to write it?
Well, there are two reasons. One was at the O'Connell Group where I work. We deal with people every day, and we work in marketing and market research, and everybody from, you know, presidents all the way down to people coming out of college. And we counsel them on careers, and we teach them about writing resumes and everything from interview prep to negotiation. But we can only talk to a certain number of people a day. We just don't have the capacity to do more than, you know, our ability to get on the phone and talk to people. And that combined with the fact I was working with Washington University in St. Louis and schools that my kids went to, I would go and do seminars for them pro bono. And even though these were top schools, the kids were still really hungry for this information. And I realized there was a huge gap. And if these top-tier schools, the kids wanted it, I thought, what about the schools where they didn't have the funding to have these great career centers? And there is a need out there where this information is not getting disseminated. And we have such a great knowledge base from the O'Connell Group, and there's a need, and I want to share the knowledge. And truly, also, Vicki, I wanted to leave a legacy.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. I mean, you have a wealth of experience and wisdom here. And, you know, these tools really are suitable for anybody at any stage of their career. So what in your perspective, from the perspective of an author, makes this different from other career books on the shelves?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I looked at a lot of career books as I was trying to decide, do I write a book? Because, first of all, is there room in the marketplace for another book? And what I realized is there were a lot of books that were very narrowly focused. There were books on how to write a resume or how to negotiate or how to write a LinkedIn profile. And then there were books that tried to cover everything, but they were so dense that you couldn't get through them. Mm-hmm. And as I tried to find something that was kind of a one-stop shopping, but really readable and relatable and engaging and actionable, I found that there was a gap. There really was nothing out there, and that was what I wanted to fill. I wanted it to be really a career Bible for anybody from somebody coming out of college to somebody who is a senior VP.
Yes, and I think you filled that gap, because when I was reading through it, and I read through it quite quickly, it's very easy to read, I thought then, you know, for somebody who's lagging a little, reading this would kind of pep them up too. You know, I think there's a tendency if we get into a situation where we're not particularly happy, some people, I know I was in this situation on one project, and then I woke up one day and thought, what the heck are you doing, Vicky? But I was not enjoying the project. I did not enjoy the people I was working with. And I kind of abandoned my own career and satisfaction, you know, in order to get the project done. So I made doubly sure the next project was going to be a win-win. I'm wondering how COVID has affected recruiting and hiring from your perspective.
Yeah, it has changed things a lot. First of all, you know, when COVID first hit, everything or almost everything froze. You know, companies didn't know what was happening, people didn't know what was happening, and only the most critical jobs were being filled. Since that time, it has picked up some, and right now, given that a lot of the uncertainty has been resolved, we have a president in place. We, you know, vaccines are out there. The feeling that more vaccines are going to be out there, and the light at the end of the tunnel is getting brighter, we're seeing a lot more jobs. But the things that have shifted are obviously majority of companies are not doing in-person interviews. So it is a lot of Zoom interviews. And very few of our clients are meeting candidates live before they extend offers. So learning how to communicate articulately via that Zoom interview, and to, you know, not just articulate what you've done, but to connect with people via that medium is really important, much more important than it ever was before. And also how to really delve into what is the culture like at this company. I'm not getting to walk the floor and get a sense for it. That's the other thing that's very different for our candidates. So they've got to learn how to kind of ask a lot of questions and ask to speak to many different people than they would have once they get the offer, to really get a sense for what is this company normally like in non-COVID times.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's talk about culture a little bit more while we're here. You say if we're not happy in a job, many times you're not the problem, nor is the company. The problem is how you two fit together. And it is difficult to find a culture that fits, I think. I like the way that you say in the book, the great way to think about culture, it's like a science experiment. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Yeah, that was one of my partners came up with that, and I thought it was a beautiful analogy. You know, it's kind of like the way to think about it is if it's a positive culture, you're going to flourish. If it's a negative culture, you're going to wither. And if it's a mediocre culture, you are just going to get by. And so the culture you're looking for is one where you can be yourself, and how you typically operate is going to be appreciated, and you don't have to change your mode of operating to try to fit in. You don't have to become somebody else to fit their culture. And you know, we have clients on all ends of the spectrum in terms of how they operate. We have some clients where it is incredibly collaborative, and it's very important to get buy-in from all levels and all areas of the organization. So you've got to be somebody who's great at getting buy-in and very methodical at that.
Right.
On the other end of the spectrum, we have companies who are fast-moving and aggressive and are all about failing fast and learning from it. And so, you know, the right person in the wrong company is going to be miserable. Somebody who likes moving fast in that collaborative company, oh, my gosh, they're going to be pulling their hair out.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need to really probe to and make sure you understand how the company operates and know yourself well enough to make sure that you're comfortable in that type of culture.
Mm-hmm. And so since we can't go on site and look around and, you know, you get, I always think you get a lot of, you know, a feel for a company by sitting in a reception area and watching employees come and go. You know, are they dragging in? Are they bouncing in? That kind of thing. But also, you know, lots been written about culture fit versus culture add. And so if we are enamored with a company and want to, you know, pursue this career with them, and they may not see us as a culture fit, how do we bring that value add to them?
You know, that's a great question. And they may not see you as a culture fit because they may not see, you know, it may be how you communicate. It may be that they don't see your results as aligning with what they're looking for. They may not see you as somebody who is proactive and agile, and that's what their company demands. And so it kind of depends, you know, what you have to bring. Sometimes you can't change their mind. Sometimes it's just their perception of, you know, And other times, it could be via references. If there's something, you know, that they perceive, sometimes proactive references can really help if there's something, you know, something that they think you don't have. Sometimes offering up a proactive reference of a past boss or somebody who knows you very well, who may have a connection with them as well, who can attest to how you operate, may take the issue off the table.
Yeah. So when we're looking for a new job or new career, you talk about leveraging our strengths and superpowers. It's really key to define what we're good at and how we can leverage those strengths. And that's often the big misfit, right, with people. So how do we go about, what kind of advice do you give people to really nail this down, because we may think we know, but you know, I think it takes time to sit back and reflect and really analyze what are we really good at, what do we really enjoy.
I think it does. And you said this earlier on in the interview when you talked about family influences, that sometimes we don't think, we just go along with the tide because it's what our family does.
Mm.
You know, so I think stepping back, and there are a couple different things. One is thinking about jobs you've had in the past, or even projects you've worked on if you're a student, and having two sheets of paper and writing all the things you loved doing and all the things you didn't love doing, and just kind of looking at those and saying, what do those tell me about myself? Other thing is you can ask friends and family or coaches or professors just to say, hey, I'm trying to do this study. What are the 1 to 2 things you think I'm great at? Then there also are these assessments you can take, and I think that they are so enlightening, and they're two that I really like. One is StrengthFinders, and StrengthFinders asks you to rate yourself on a scale. You know, where do you see yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Then they come up with 5 areas that you're really strong on and link those to different things that your unique strengths could set you up for success. A second one is something called YouScience, Y-O-U-Science. And what YouScience has you play 9 computer games, like they're 8-minute computer games. And from that, they figure out how your brain is wired. And again, they tell you your strengths and where they can take you. And every person I know who has taken these tests say that they're scary accurate, and sometimes they are so enlightening. I know somebody who recently took it who said their strengths came back as design, and they're not in a design role at all. And they said, sat back and said, wow, maybe that's why I have all these design books at home.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, I really love it, and I thought I just loved it because it's fun, but maybe it's really a strength and a passion of mine.
Yeah, interesting.
So I am a big believer, if you can find that job that leverages how your brain is wired and what you're innately great at, you're going to be like me. The job is all of a sudden going to be so much easier, so much more fun, and you're going to be set up for success.
Yeah, and I think anytime we can ask for that 360 feedback from friends and colleagues, peers, people above us, people who report to us, I think that's a really great tool. I've had to do that many times, and it's quite eye-opening, and it shows some of your weaknesses too. So, but it's always very eye-opening, I think, because we may often overlook things that we're really good at too.
Well, and sometimes we overlook them because we're so good at them, we don't think they're strengths.
Yes, exactly. We're just used to doing them. We just do them. And so, yeah, we don't recognize them. One of the things that has changed drastically over the years is recruitment, the way that I see recruitment agencies. And maybe it's just up here in the Northwest, because years ago, when I moved to America, when I moved cities, whatever, I'd go to a recruitment agency, job agency, and they would, you know, they would really help you find a job. But I'm listening to many people now who do contract work, gig work, or looking for full-time employment, and they say that agencies today tend to work for the employer. Their recruiter may be all over them when they're looking to fill a position, but they're not so available when that gig worker is looking for a job. So what advice do you have people about selecting recruiters and agencies to work with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I am a big believer there's a wide range of recruiters, and finding a couple recruiters in your niche, so that are experts in your area, kind of like the O'Connell Group is in marketing and market research, to be your partner throughout your career is huge. So finding those folks and building those relationships and telling them not only about your background but about your desires is the best way you can manage your career. And those folks, if you've done your job and built the relationship, when those jobs come up, and you're a good candidate, they should be on the phone calling you, because you should be a top. You should pop to the top as they do their target universes. But you've got to take the calls, even when you're happy. Vicki, I believe you should take the calls, tell them you're happy, tell them all the great things you've done, but say, oh, FYI, I am from Seattle, and someday I'd like to go back home, so if you ever get a great job, I want to hear about it.
Hmm.
That's how you build relationships long-term, I think, with recruiters.
Right. And so while we're talking about relationships, let's talk about networking, because that too has changed drastically. You know, I used to go to some fantastic lunch events and evening, you know, dinner events, and not that I play golf, but they'd have golf events and stuff like that. And it seems not just because of COVID, but over the last, I'd say, as technology advanced, it seems they've died down considerably, at least in this area. There's a great quote by Harvey McKay, and I'm sure you know this, dig your well before you're thirsty. And so how do we go about networking and continuing to network, and especially now with COVID when we can't meet people face to face? What are your recommendations around that?
Well, and I have a whole chapter in the book, and a lot of the presentations I've been doing during COVID have been about networking. Vicki, I could not agree more with that quote. So I believe networking is just about the most important thing you can do during this time, and I think it's easier to do it now than it's ever been. I mean, I have talked to more CEOs during COVID than I ever have, because they don't have the gatekeeper there. People are at home working, and so they are hungry for a human connection. So I am telling people to reach out to people in their industry, from their high school, from their college, from their grad school, people they worked with in previous jobs, to pay attention to LinkedIn and look for people in their industry and comment on posts. And if you see ones you really like, to not just comment on them, but then message the person and say, hey, I really liked your post. It resonated with me. I'm wondering if you might spend 10 minutes with somebody more junior in the industry to share your knowledge and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But people I am finding are networking more than ever. And as I was writing my book, I was reaching out to authors right, left, and center. And every single one was so generous with their time and knowledge and wisdom. It was amazing. So I think people are really open to networking and want to give back.
Right. And are you doing most of that? Do you do most of yours by email? I just know that the people I work with, you know, get like 500 emails a day. So it's, how do you break through that?
Yeah, it's a great point. So I will do it via email, but it's interesting. Lots of times LinkedIn breaks through more than email. I don't know why. If it gets to people more easily, if you don't get as many LinkedIn messages, I'm not sure what it is, but those always get returned, whereas an email might get buried.
Hmm. Okay. So one of the things you talk about in the book is think long view. And I think this is critical too, because if we're not careful, we can keep sidestepping and end up really going nowhere. And going back to your career, as an example, you took a job that looked great on paper, but wasn't necessarily in your wheelhouse, and ultimately you felt was a mistake. So why do we sometimes make choices that don't serve us? You know, what was going through your mind when you took that job, and how do we, you know, what do we have to consider before we make those moves so we don't get sidelined?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there are a bunch of times I look back in my career where I wish I could, like, kick my
We've all got those.
Yeah, what the heck were you thinking? I don't know. I think I was worried about what other people were thinking. I really don't know why I took it, except for it was a little bit more money, a little bit bigger bonus. But the job did not align with my strengths. The other one aligned so perfectly with my strengths, and to this day, I don't know why I didn't take it. But the beauty of being a recruiter now is I see people. You know, people come to me with different options, not even through me, just they have options and they want somebody to bounce it off of. And I try to talk to them about, you focus on the long term and where do you want to go, and think about, is this moving you on the right path? Or are you just reaching for that brass ring because it's shiny, but you're running fast, but you're on the wrong race? So it's so critical to always think long term. And many times, I was talking to somebody today who wanted to get promoted really, really fast. And I was trying to explain to her that getting promoted really fast, especially early on in your career, is not necessarily a great thing. Building superior foundational skills is going to serve her much better long term than moving to a smaller company and getting a bigger title fast. And it's a hard thing at a junior level to really understand, but it's so critical long term.
Yes. My dad always used to say, do you want to be a big fish in a small pond or a small fish in a big pond?
Right.
There's a lot of truth. So let's talk about telling your story and then we can move into some interviewing tips. Interviewers often say, tell me about yourself. It's a huge question. And sometimes, if we're not prepared for that, it can get messy. We can end up rambling or including irrelevant details and omitting important ones. So your recommendations include this, and I love this. Don't wow them, woo them, and use STAR to be a star. Would you tell us what you mean by those two phrases? Don't wow them, woo them.
Yeah. So the first thing is, I really believe interviewing is about the wooing and the wowing, and the wooing is connecting with people. It's having them walk away from that interviewing saying, I love Vicki, love to have her on my team, love to go out and have a drink with her after work. I mean, she's great, she fits in, she's awesome. And the wowing piece comes away with, love Vicki and think she could deliver phenomenal results on our team. And they are both equally important. If a client has two people who they think are equal, they will always lean into the person they like more.
Yeah.
Who woos them more. So I tell people, you cannot disregard the woo factor. You have got to connect with people. And over Zoom, that's even more important.
Yes. I've hired many hundreds of people over the years, and I have to concur on that. It's, if you've got two candidates of equal, it's the one you have the connection with. So.
Yep. And then you asked about the star format.
Yes.
When people are asked, tell me your strengths, tell me your achievements, and they rattle them off, people don't remember leadership, analytics, whatever. I mean, they don't remember the words. They remember stories. And so what I tell my candidates to do is you want to tell a story that creates a visual that somebody can remember. So tell people to tell a story in the star format, which is situation, thinking, and the thinking is really, the way to think about it is, what is the thing that made the light bulb go off, like that brought you to the action and the result? So think, situation, thinking, action, result, and that's how you want to structure your story that you tell them. And they might not remember that you said you were, great at influencing people, but they will remember the story you tell.
Right. And a quick word on interviewing, because you say you have a whole chapter in the book, but candidates miss out on jobs because they don't get on top of the process. So beyond the obvious of, dressing well, speaking well, knowing the company, knowing your story, what should we do to make sure we nail the interview process?
So you got to know yourself inside and out. You have to do homework on yourself. Like you said, you have to do homework on the company. You want to show them that you are sincerely interested. Over the years, we've had way too many candidates who lose jobs because they didn't know the brands. They couldn't show interest in the company. At the end of the interview, I always tell people to, when it's their turn to ask questions, to say something like, I do have questions, but before I ask my questions, I want to make sure you're sold on me as a candidate. So if there's anything I didn't answer well or we didn't get to, I'd much rather focus on that. And then lastly, Vicki, when it is your turn to ask questions, tell candidates to ask questions that make them think you're smart, you're strategic, and you've done your homework. There's a group of questions that I call WIFMs, what's in it for me, mm-hmm. which are things like, what's your 401k match? Can you tell me more about the hours people work? Can you tell me more about the responsibilities of this role? Or any sort of minutia like those? None of those should be asked until you're holding an offer.
Right.
They can get in the way of the offer. So all of those, I tell people, as you think of them, throw them into a folder. And when you get the offer, pull them out, they're fair game. But at this point, you want your questions to still be selling you.
Right, right. Great advice. And Chris, you have a whole chapter on win-win negotiations, but I want to ask you just if you'd give us a quick tip on, you know, when we're asked, what's your rate? You know, what's your expected salary? How do you tell people to respond to that?
Well, I would tell you first, before you're talking to a company, you want to do homework. So you want to make sure you know, what jobs pay in, you know, in this segment, in this geography, so that you have a realistic range. They also want to know what you were making before, and you don't want to put the amount too high because you're going to price yourself out of the market. So you want to put a realistic range in there, and then just stop. The only other time I tell people to put their actual compensation in is if they're highly compensated and it's a very senior level search. At that point, I might tell them to say, well, this is what I'm making today. Because you really do want them to have all pieces of your compensation, including your long-term incentives if you have a car, because you're going to want at least a lateral, if not a higher offer. And so you want them to have all components.
Right. Well, the book is full of great advice, Ignite Your Career, Strategies and Tactics to Unleash Your Potential. Chris, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Listeners can find out more about you at igniteyourcareerbook.com, igniteyourcareerbook.com. A final thought you'd like to leave them with?
Well, there are two things. So, Vicki, as you said, they can find out more at that website. The other thing is, not only can they buy the book there, but we also offer services such as complete coaching, resume writing, interview prep, and negotiations there. But the other thing I will tell you is we are seeing the marketplace heat up, and I would tell people to be proactive in their search, network, get their resume in great shape, because I think it's going to get really hot and there are going to be a lot of great opportunities.
Well, that sounds good. Something to look forward to. We need it.
Absolutely.
Well, Chris Holmes, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
And I just want to let listeners quickly know that if you have comments, feedback, or questions on today's show, you can find me through our website at conversationslive.net. Please join us next week. Until then, stay healthy, stay strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.